Roughly Speaking with Dan Rogics is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes David Linden, Johns Hopkins Professor of Neuroscience and editor of Think Tank, a cutting-edge collection of essays exploring the quirky and counterintuitive aspects of the brain. Linden will be joined by colleagues Dr. Connor and Dr. Bastian. Wednesday, April 25th at 7 p.m. at the Ivy Bookshop at 6080 Falls Road. For more information, call 410-377-2966 or go to theivybookshop.com. The Ivy Bookshop, your book is waiting.
Hello from the Baltimore Sun, I'm Dan Rodericks. This is Roughly Speaking, episode 377 for Friday, April 20th, 2018. So when I first came to the Baltimore Sun, we had a reporter here named Patrick Gilbert, who was from West Virginia. His daddy was a coal miner. And one springtime, I don't know how the subject came up, but he said, "Are you going to have some ramps this spring?" I said, "Ramps?"
Ramps is like basically like a garlic or an onion. It's just something that grows wild.
I grew up in New England. I never heard of ramps. And Patrick grew up harvesting them every spring.
They grew wild. They just grew crazy. We got ramps everywhere.
And he described them as a wild onion. And his family belonged to a church that had a church supper, a ramps supper. This was years ago, right? So that was my first experience with ramps. And I've always wanted to know more about them and actually see them.
I'm not going to tell you exactly where I'm at because there's a lot of people would like to have all these ramps and they'd probably take them all.
And taste them. There's an opportunity coming up on April 28th out of Deep Creek Lake, and Caroline Blizzard, who is a park ranger at Deep Creek Lake, is joining Henry Hong and John Shields and me to talk about ramps. So, Caroline, welcome to the Roughly Speaking podcast here at the Baltimore Sun.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So, when was the first time you heard about ramps, Caroline? Did you grow up somewhere in the region where they grow?
I did grow up in the region where they grow, and it was kind of a, you know, I remembered it happening at the kitchen table when I was young. I remember a cousin sliding a jar of pickled ramps across the kitchen table to my grandfather, kind of taking note of it and, you know, kind of his reaction to it. And then when I was became a park ranger and started at Harrington Manor in Swallow Falls, you kind of get caught up in it. In this community, it's very much as you described, church dinners, fundraisers, everybody's talking about ramps. So I was like, I remember that, and began to get involved with it at the park level.
John, how about you? Because you grew up in Baltimore. Did you hear about ramps when you were growing up in Baltimore?
Absolutely not. they didn't talk so much about ramps, and it wasn't until, I bet you I was in California, and some other chefs were talking about them because they had come from there. And then I started reading about them, and they were becoming, especially the festivals, were becoming much more popular. So you would read about it in Gourmet Magazine or Savoir Magazine. And then when I came back home and started working with Gertrude's, then we were actually meeting people who had grown up using ramps.
Now, that would be Western Maryland or West Virginia,
yeah,
mostly, right?
Yeah, but it has spilled down from the mountains, and now it's like the hottest thing. You know, every chef in Baltimore is talking about ramps and trying to incorporate
and
ramps.
Getting them on their menu.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, Henry is the food nerd, and he's an intrepid food explorer, adventurer, journalist, and you looked into ramps some years ago yourself, right?
Yeah, so I knew it was a while ago, and I just looked. It was 2011. So, mm-hmm. pardon me. So by then, I think it had been at least a couple of years, as John was saying. In Baltimore, nobody knew what ramps were, and then suddenly everybody knew what ramps were.
Right.
Probably, you know, just East Coast in general, then across the country.
Well, they like the idea that this is a wild thing. You can only get a certain time of the year, and yeah. pretty rare, right?
Yeah,
fairly rare.
Highly super seasonal. You know, just probably, I'm sure Caroline can expand on that, maybe like a month or something like that. And I remember back when, even in 2011 and prior to that, there was, you know, growing concern that because of the rising, the exploding popularity, that the wild population, I don't know if you can call a plant population of ramps, was kind of decreasing at an alarming rate.
Because it was being harvested too much?
Yeah. And then at the time, there was only one farm in West Virginia, and at the time that was the kind of the biggest ramp festival that was being held in West
Virginia. One farm that was producing it?
Yeah, there was only one farm, a West Virginia outfit that was growing ramps, cultivating ramps.
Domesticating the
yes.
ramps.
Yes, so and that I bought, yeah. you know, ramp plants from them to plant in my backyard.
And how'd that work out?
It worked out great, except they all died all at once because I was harvesting, I was cutting them, and they don't really come back, but they were growing to be these big, beautiful, like kind of broad green leaves. I don't know if you've ever seen ramps. They sort of look like scallions, but they're droopy and they're wide.
No, I haven't seen them. So
yeah,
actually,
they're cool.
Caroline, would you do something real basic for us and describe ramps, what they look like coming out of the ground and then after you pull them or harvest them?
Absolutely. So let me speak to what they like. They like high altitude and low light, and the second it gets hot, they're out of here. So it's kind of like sort of like maple syrup. You get this one time to capture this. Mm-hmm. And in Appalachia right now, everything, you know, it's snowing out my window currently at the moment. So where we find ramps, it's the only green thing growing. And where it grows in a carpet. And it is a sort of like a scallion, like you said. It's a cross between a scallion, garlic, and a leek. So it's a broad leaf, only two, comes out of the ground, and then it's got a white bulb underground.
How big does Caroline? How big does that bulb get? The biggest ramp you've ever seen? Like how big would you say that? Is it more like scallion size or what?
The biggest one is probably a little larger than scallion. Maybe the largest one would be sort of, I don't know, a small spring onion.
Mm-hmm.
So shooter marble size, it's getting pretty big. I don't tend to see that. The growing season here is a little different. Right now, like, we're not in a panic, but we've been in this cold spell, so the ramps are taking their good time. So the bulbs are probably not going to be as large this year during the harvest time as they can be in years past or at slightly warmer climates earlier.
Just a note to our listeners, we are recording this on April 19th, Thursday, April 19th. And Caroline is out at Deep Creek Lake at the Discovery Center there, and it's snowing again?
It is snowing.
Yeah, I've got my winter coat on, and Dan's got a sweater on.
I got a scarf.
Oh, scarf.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little chilly in Baltimore.
I don't know if again is as appropriate as still.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a long winter. We're into spring now, and I know Deep Creek area, Garrett County's had snow, just in the last week or so, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had measurable snow 2 days ago, and then kind of warmed up yesterday. We lost it, and now it's snowing again.
So you're a little concerned about the size of the ramps, but also I have this really important question for you. You set a date for the ramps cook-off at the Discovery Center, April 28th. How do you know they'll be available?
Yeah, it's kind of right in the middle. It's the time. I mean, this is our 19th annual, so we've never not had them. Sometimes we have to go to different patches where we can get larger bulbs. But you can eat the entire plant. So one way or the other, we're either having large bulbs or we're getting that taste out of a much smaller bulb from underground. But we're still able to do it. It's just not quite the bite, the chewable bite that you get with the larger bulb. And the bulbs are much easier to can. You can pickle them a little easier. But without a bulb, we can still do all the stuff we do. We deep fry them. We grill them. We mix them in potatoes and we've had hard-boiled bacon-wrapped ramp-dipped eggs, ice cream, just
ramps ice cream.
Quite creative with it. Ramp ice cream.
Wow,
yeah. Pretty good. Everybody was like, "This isn't as bad as I thought it was."
There's all kinds of things going into ice cream these days. John, you heard Caroline mention pickled ramps.
Yeah,
you actually have a recipe for that you share with us.
Yeah. So obviously it'll be on your website.
Yeah,
and one of the things about that, I mean, it's all these things are short season. You know, they're only there for a little bit. So you're always looking for something that you can preserve these things. And so the pickled ramps is a great thing to do. You know, it's just really a sweet and sour kind of thing with vinegar and sugar and some mustard seed, peppercorns, caraway, fennel.
Henry, what did you do with the ramps that you grew in your yard?
So treated them a lot like an herb or a scallion. One thing that I've seen a lot in restaurants we do at where I currently work, the chefs like to do is use the leaves and make a pesto out of it. So just super easy, water, oil, garlic, whatever it is.
Food processor.
Yeah, and of course, you know, again, the leaves of the ramps are just like really nice kind of emerald green color, which, you know, comes through in any sort of sauce you make. And then, yeah, the bulbs are kind of built for pickling. You know, these nice white going into purple bulbs and kind of the white part of the stems.
What did you think of the taste? What did you think of the flavor?
It is sort of a cross. It's definitely, you can tell it's an allium, you know, like an onion family bulb. But it's got a real clean sort of vegetal, as Caroline was saying, sometimes kind of a bite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess kind of a, not really a sulfurous bite, but it's kind of sharp and mellow at the same time. You know what I mean? It's not spicy like garlic would be, or even onions sometimes. Maybe it's psychosomatic, but it does have a kind of a fresh spring-like quality to it.
Right.
You know, and maybe it is that knowledge that it's so short-lived, as John was saying, you know.
Right. Caroline, so how many years have you had the cook-off there at the Discovery Center?
I think we're at our 19th year, and I was at Harrington Manor in Swallow Falls there, and then I brought it with me over here. So we're 19 years strong.
And where do people who compete in the cook-off get their ramps? Do they come right from their backyards, or do they go into the woods looking for them? Or?
Well, if they're lucky enough to know where to find them, they get their own. But because it's such a hard-fought thing to find, we have a force of volunteers who I blindfold, spin around three times, and drive in backwards through the patch. And then we dig a lot of ramps. So next week we'll be in the forest digging and cleaning. And then we'll provide ramps to folks that want to try their hand at cooking it.
When you come upon ramps wherever you know, blindfoldedly take people, are they all clumped together, or are they spread around an area?
A good hillside and a good patch, it'll be everywhere. It's hard to walk without you actually stepping on them. But when you get down to the patch you're going to dig from, they're often 5, 6, or 7, 8, even 10 in a clump. So we try to move clump to clump, trying to conserve the ramp as we go, leave as much root in the ground as we can. So out of a clump of 5 or 6, we may remove 2 or 3 ramps from that clump and then move on to another one. And again, we're real careful to, as best that we can, leave, you know, root underground.
You know, as a spring event, a spring festival at a church or a volunteer fire company or whatever it is in West Virginia or Western Maryland or somewhere in Appalachia, this goes back a long ways, the harvesting of the ramps?
Yes. I mean, I remember my grandfather and his brothers talking about how they'd walk into school, they would stop. They'd sneak out of the house with white bread and butter, and they'd stop at the ramp patch on the way, eat ramp sandwiches, get to school, and then be sent home.
Wow.
Because they smelled so bad. You know.
But if you want to get rid of anybody, just eat these ramps. And you'll actually sweat them out of your pores if you get hot. Get around a bunch of people. They'll smell you. Trust me, they'll smell you.
The stink of a ramp has everything to do with whether you eat it raw or cooked, I believe. So, and it's a completely different experience either way. So we actually have 2 categories of judging for the cooked ramp or the raw ramp because it is so different in terms of its ramped up taste.
Do some people consider it part of the spring tonic? That is, you know, a wild seasonal vegetable that you just got to get into your body once a year for I don't know, therapeutic, medicinal reasons.
Absolutely. Loaded with vitamin C, only, you know, as fresh of a vegetable that you're going to find, grown by nature, impacted by anything else, and you just got to have ramps. It becomes a panic situation when you see people start to bring them in and you haven't had yours yet.
Yeah. So the cook-off is April 28th, Saturday, that's Saturday, at the Discovery Center at Deep Creek, and it goes on for a couple hours, right?
Correct. As long as the food lasts, and that has everything to do with how many cooks we have. So we have a judging that Kevin Dodge, who is at our local college up here, has been the judge from the beginning, and we tend to pick somebody out of the audience who really doesn't know anything about the ramp, and the two of them judge. And while that's happening, we're outside, and we keep everybody sort of at bay with our first winning recipe, which is a deep-fried, double-dipped ramp bulb, and grilled ramps, ramps and potatoes, and often a ramp cornbread. So the food lasts for as long as we can hold it off. Yeah. So we serve stuff to kind of, you know, the longer the judging takes, folks are staring at us with their knife and their fork and their plate like, come on already.
You know, I'm going to check back with you after this festival. If I don't get there myself, see what the winning entries were. So.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah.
And we should tell folks if they want to enter, they could still enter?
Absolutely. Yep. I just need a little heads up that they're coming, and if they need ramps, we should have them here by Wednesday. So, off for what typically occurs in a dish, just need to know you're coming so we can decide where to put you. But we would love to have you.
All right, Caroline. Thank you very much for your time. Good luck with the ramps cook-off.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
want to say something about spring food rituals. My mother would harvest, go out and pick dandelions and make the dandelion salad. I liked dandelion salad. She later would cook dandelions, like stew them with ham or something. I did not like that as a kid. It practically made me gag. But the salad, I thought, was great. But you got to get there early and fast to get those dandelions, right?
Yeah.
And we didn't put fertilizer or herbicides in our backyard, so there were plenty of dandelions in our backyard.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the key. Like, I just picked some last week, actually, because we're getting our front garden beds ready. And we save the leaves. And the spring dandelions, way different than summer dandelions. Summer dandelions, you sort of can't eat.
No.
They're too fibrous,
too
bitter.
Yeah.
But the spring ones, I made a real quick kimchi. Be happy to share a recipe with. Super easy.
With dandelions.
Yeah, so you don't really cook them. What you do with all kimchi is you start by wilting the vegetable.
It's like a tossed salad at first.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, you start it with just a little water to moisten it and salt. And then you let the salt, you know, wilt it for about a half hour. And that's the cooking process, essentially. Then you just flavor it. But so it turned out so great.
You could actually make kimchi with any of those.
Yeah.
Greens that you get in the spring, right?
Absolutely.
All year, really. Kale you could use.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a couple of traditional types that are made with, you know, it's a chive. It's sort of different than the chives that we're used to, but, you know, similar to ramps, you know, it's all in the same sort of plant family.
Yeah.
I was going to say, we're lucky enough to have a green space in our neighborhood that it's not run by the city. It's sort of run by all the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody goes out there and sprays fertilizer on it. There's no grass care company or anything like that, but most other places, especially parks, there are. So if you're going to go out there and pick any kind of plant to eat, I would caution listeners out there to keep that in mind.
My mother would also go to some farmer's field that hadn't been turned over for a couple of years, and she would find dandelions out there. She did this until she was in her 80s and shouldn't have been out there by herself, but she was doing it with a colander and a paring knife. That's what she'd do.
Yeah.
And John, spring traditions in Baltimore, well, I always think of the shad run, right?
Yeah, the shad roe.
The migratory fish that ends up in the fish market usually is roe, and that seems to be a fading tradition, or what?
In one way it is, and I think it's because most younger people haven't had it. I remember Tommy Chigouris from Knicks was talking about, you know, how the sales were just going down with the local fish, you know, like hardheads, croakers, all those kinds of things.
But you can get it at the Peppermill.
You can get it at the Peppermill.
We always mention the Peppermill because it takes an older crowd there, right?
Yeah.
And they like to keep that tradition.
Yeah. So we find that too. You know, people that come, it's usually the older ones that want it, and so you try to do it in some other different kinds of ways and salads and stuff so that the younger ones will give it a shot.
Do you have it on the menu?
As it's available, we do.
I mean, now, like April, May?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to throw in one from my childhood. It's a great memory of a herring run.
Yeah.
A couple of towns over from where I grew up on the South Shore of Massachusetts, the town is pronounced Pembroke. It looks like Pembroke, B-R-O-K-E. It had an old historic herring run. Herring came in from the Atlantic Ocean and ran into this, basically this trap, you know, where they'd be netted. And there was a local restaurateur, Bobby Hackett, who would start a fire and had a big, I believe it was a copper frying pan, a gigantic frying pan, and they would fry up herring right out of the herring run. And I think you got some baked beans and some cornbread with it, and they use it as a fundraiser for the local historic commission, or to keep the herring run going.
Yeah.
It was a cool thing to see all those fish coming in from the ocean. Yeah. So that's my spring memory, spring tradition, food tradition.
Not to get too far off topic, but why is Herring Run Park called Herring Run?
Because herring would run in from the bay.
That far up?
Oh, they did,
Henry.
Holy cow. I've always wondered that.
You know, it was dams that stopped all this from happening.
Yeah.
In that town I just mentioned, the town I grew up in, we didn't see herring because of dams that were built during colonial period and after that, the 19th century. They just recently have started taking down these dams, and herring are again running out of the ocean all the way up into ponds in these towns on the South Shore of Massachusetts.
Wow. Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah. I hear people tell stories about having seen herring and other like smelts coming up the bay.
Like all the way up on like Harford Road. That's
years
amazing.
Ago, yeah. They did once upon a time. It was dams and other obstacles that stopped them from
migrating. Really cool. I had no idea. Yeah.
Well, whatever you're eating this spring, enjoy yourself. And again, if you want some information about the Ramps Cook-Off at Deep Creek Lake, it sounds like a fun time, doesn't it?
It does.
You can find it in the notes with this podcast. Henry Hong, John Shields, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
John Shields is a cookbook author and the master of the house at Gertrude's Restaurant in the Baltimore Museum of Art. Henry Hong, the food nerd, is food and beverage manager at the Baltimore Country Club. You can find a link to the story Henry wrote about ramps for the City Paper in 2011 in the notes with this episode of Roughly Speaking. And there's also a link to a list of ramps dinners being held this month, this weekend, and next in West Virginia. That's our show for now. Your thoughts are always welcome by email, Twitter, or on Facebook. Please review our show on iTunes if you get a chance. We'd appreciate that. For producers Steve Early and Quinn Kelly, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking from the Baltimore Sun. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at 6080 Falls Road, located at the intersection of Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. More information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.